Good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm joined this afternoon by Penny, who is here to talk with us about quite a fun insight she had recently about the privileged environment. Welcome, Penny.
Hi, Jen. I'm hearing a click. Are you?
Well, you're hearing a click because there's an issue with AT&T cell phones on the radio show right now. And
okay.
So I'm actually at the end of the good news update, I'm actually going to mention to Michael that we have some thoughts for people about how to get around that. But at any rate, can you still hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. So the privileged environment, something that we talk about actually quite frequently in practice just because it's so foundational to practice itself. And we were together in a group setting recently, and you said something that really resonated, I think, for a number of us, and thought it would be kind of a fun thing to explore on the Good News Update. So I think it was around talking about your experience of the privileged environment when you were here training monastically for a month. Is that right?
That's right. And as I recall, what I said was, all we're doing here is maintaining the privileged environment, and that we all are maintaining the privileged environment.
Which could seem incredibly simple, but there's so much in that, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, what came up for me, I think perhaps the biggest learning when I was a visiting monk was that's what we're all doing, and so we're all sort of making the same kind of contribution. We're all in the same place. We're all in the same endeavor, and I think that, you know, it's easy to kind of see the monastery as somehow belonging really to the monks or belonging really to people who live here, and
mm-hmm.
So it's a great thing to come down and you know, live here for a month and get it that all of us, I've come to see since, both on and off the property, what all of us are doing is maintaining the environment within which all of us can practice.
Yeah.
And that's a shared endeavor.
Yeah, it's a shared endeavor, exactly. But truly, it actually requires every single one of us in order to hold the integrity of that environment.
It really does. It really does.
Uh-huh.
I had the incident that always pops up when I think about that was one day I had been working in the kitchen and I had an apron on, and uh-huh. I was going out to the garden and I still had the apron on, and a monk said, "Penny, you have your apron on." And I thought, "Oh right, I have to take it off." And what, you know, it was just one of those little moments where I got it that what he was, it was not a reprimand. What he was saying
right.
was, you know, this is not what we do in the privileged environment, and since we're all in this together, I just need to remind you of that. And I really got what a partnership it is.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, that really what we're doing is, as we're awakening, we're in that process, we are assisting each other to awaken. It really, it's all one thing. It's not,
yeah.
I'm going to awaken and you're, yeah.
Right. The other thing that comes up for me around this is, you know, when I'm always amazed when we all get together, and that can be, you know, on a phone call or it can be in virtual meditation. Whenever sangha gathers,
uh-huh.
I always have this sense of, God, I am so lucky to be, you know, with this amazing group of people. And then what arises for me is, it's not necessarily that we're so amazing, but the environment calls that out of us.
Oh,
you know,
that is beautifully put. Yeah.
The privileged environment creates sangha, and sangha creates the privileged environment. And so our experience of each other is the best experience we can have because the environment elicits that from us.
Ah. Well, you know, I'm not sure I've ever quite seen it that way. The privileged environment creates sangha. Sangha creates the privileged environment. That really is true. I mean, as I'm looking to my own experience, that's absolutely the truth. And we can see that each for ourselves, right? So when I'm in sangha, I mean, it's just no question. I'm not going to interfere with other people. I'm not going to, well, you know, I mean, ego might attempt to do all the things it attempts to do, but it's not going to be supported. And as you say, you know, if you walk out with your apron, it's going to be pointed out, which we've asked for. I mean, that's what we've signed up for.
Right.
So to the best of each of our ability, what that environment is calling out in us is our heart, which is what I project calls us to practice. That's where we want to live from. And then to watch when I'm, say, not in the privileged environment, in the sense of maybe other people around me are not holding that same intention, there can be that sloppiness, that sense of like, it doesn't really matter. I mean, what difference? And to watch what that kind of environment brings out in us, which of course is conditioning, and to see, wow, that's actually not where I want to live at all.
Yeah. And you know, it's both rigorous and relaxing because rigorous in that we need to make the commitment and honor those things, and it's relaxing in that it's not up to it's not up to the personality. It's not that we all have to come here and be good. It's that we the more we come to understand the environment and support that, we actually step out of ego into that environment, and that's who we are in that environment.
Really, yeah, exactly. And you know, that piece about being able to relax into it, to me, another piece of that is that we're relaxing into the safety of the privileged environment, that I project so much of that tension that we hold is this illusion that I need to defend myself against this, you know, world that's coming at me. And what we find is that when we come into something like the privileged environment, we actually can let go because the heart is completely safe and supported in this environment.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, I can remember when I very first came to the monastery and I didn't understand the privileged environment. It seemed to me like a really unfriendly place.
Uh-huh.
And it took a long time to get it that it is the friendliest place, but it's just not friendly to ego. And the relief of getting it that that we're not only not required to be a personality, but it's really required that we not be a personality. As you say, it just allows it allows us to let go in a way that it's almost impossible to let go any other place.
Yeah. You know, as you're saying that, I'm just looking to see, you know, for folks who might be listening who, you know, very likely if they've been around any time at all, they've heard the term privileged environment, but maybe not had the direct experience. Kind of a way to describe what that is, what the elements of it are. I mean, obviously, a big piece of it is silence. As we're going around, we're not speaking with one another. But there's more to it than that.
Yeah, I mean, there's the practices. I mean, there's you know, keeping custody of the eyes and and maintaining the silence and not interfering with other people. But it's really about creating the place where we can be the most authentic people we can be.
Yeah.
And we're so used to dealing from personality that at first it's not a relief not to be a personality, but it becomes, in time, a relief to just be a participant, just participate and not have to be somebody.
Yeah. Well, it really gives us the opportunity, doesn't it, to begin to just know who this human is. You know, there's a quote sometimes put on the board of that, you know, I think, is it St. Augustine? People pass by mountains and marvel at, you know, huge bodies of ocean and pass by themselves with not even a second glance, assuming I know this person, I know who this person is, but really we don't. And in that quiet, in that being left to ourselves, being left to our own experience, while being supported by all of Sangha around us who are doing the same thing, we actually get our first true experience of the authenticity that is the goodness of the human.
That's right, and we get it partly because we're in an environment where everyone is being more authentic probably than we are any other place.
Yeah.
I'm always, you know, we sort of joke about it. We don't know anybody's last name, we don't know where they live, we don't know what they do, and yet the level of intimacy that one can feel just from what is shared in group or just from sharing a task that you do silently together, knowing that you're all working toward the same thing, is actually far more intimate than all the sharing of my story that we can do.
In fact, I've often had the sense that intimacy of the silence probably explains a lot of the chatter in the world, you know, is that uncomfortable with that intimacy, with that just incredible, the power of that authenticity just being there in the silence.
Silence is an incredibly intimate experience. It's happened many times, but I'm thinking back to, again, when I was newer and having to, I think we had to clean up the workshop with someone, and how I was amazed that we managed to work it out without ever making eye contact, without ever talking about who was going to do what. It's like we just sort of knew how to negotiate in a way that in any other setting we would have been talking about.
Uh, God, that's beautiful. It reminds me of how people will talk about the one of the most fun experiences of being in monastic training is participating in meal cleanups. You know, just that dance that happens. So much happens in like a 15, 20-minute period, and yet there's zero talking. There's no, oh, I'll do this. I'll take. Oh, can you come help with this? It's just everyone moves, you know, choreographic through the tasks.
Yeah, you know? It's a form of relating to other to one another that almost never happens when we're busy talking about relating to one another.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So, Penny, I confess, we're at 5 o'clock now, and I had a whole other ambition for us, so we might have to have you back.
Okay.
And I'll just give a little hint of that, which is that I feel like, you know, one of the things that's so helpful is to realize as we practice more and more that the privileged environment is not something that lives at the monastery. It's something that we truly can carry with us. And I know, you know, you being someone who spends a good deal of time at the monastery, but also a good deal of time not at the monastery, probably have quite a bit you've seen about that. So I'm hoping we can have you back on and kind of do part two, if you're willing.
Sure.
All right. Very good.
Thanks
for being with us.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, Michael, before we turn it over to you, I did want to make a service announcement about the clicking.
Okay, good.
I noticed, by the way, it's much better tonight. I don't know if other people are having that experience, but last week I thought it was just horrendous on the phone I was on. And this week it's only, I would say, mild.
I see.
But the sort of spirit of inquiry, we've been hot on the trail for a number of weeks, and I think it's narrowed down to, it's for some odd reason, if you call into the show on an AT&T cell phone, you get the clicking. And if you call in, if you participate in any other way, you don't. So someone with an AT&T cell phone stumbled on the fact that you can actually download the Start Meeting app onto your phone.
Yeah.
And then if you call in, you know, using a cellular connection, if you call in through the app, you don't hear the clicking.
So. Yes. Great. So if I'm hearing you correctly, even if you do have an AT&T cell phone, you can download the Start Meeting app, call in from there, which would be over internet, over cellular data, and then you don't hear the clicking.
Yeah, that's what I'm
told.
And
you can still talk from there, too, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Great.
So the instructions for the Start Meeting app, I'm pretty sure, are on our website. So that's, you know, if people need that, they could start there.
Yeah, so that would be openairwithsherryhuber.org, and you can also get there from the Living Compassion website.
Yeah. All right, well, that was all. Have a great show.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Penny. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. I tell you, I'm happily without clicks.
Great.
Yes, it's a lovely thing. And then aside from that, just flowing along like water.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's a good time too.
That's
about you?
Good image.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, focusing on joy is a good thing.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been having sensations in the body that most people would label pain, and I'm practicing relabeling them as joy, and it's just transformative. It takes the conditional out of it, which is really great.
Yeah. So it's that place that we talk about where we. So if I have pain, I forget how lucky I am to be alive.
Yes.
Right? So if we focus on that, well, gosh, I'm alive, and that would be one of the bottom line causes for this pain. I'm a living human being with a body. So, but, you know, let's start with what we can be grateful for and enjoy, and not so much focus on the this hurts.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And remembering that most of the time I'm without pain, and for that I'm exceedingly grateful.
Yes. Yeah. You know, with the recording and listening, that I'm like a dog with a bone. So I was writing to somebody in the class today, you know, just kind of joking back and forth, but You know, people struggle so much with recording and listening. You know, you're going to record this stuff, and you're going to listen to it, and you're going to focus on joy, and you're going to look at trees and butterflies and water and feel joy. And, you know, oh, please. but if we ask them, if we gave an assignment to go home right now and start making recordings of every hateful, mean, cruel, frightening thing that you can imagine, you know, just put it all on recordings and then listen to it all day long, a lot of people would be horrified and fail to notice that that's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yep, get that attention shifted over to what's working, what's good, what we can be grateful for, and life is a whole lot happier.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of announcements here.
Okay.
Guidance Day is Saturday, December 13th.
Uh-huh.
It's important to support your practice through the one-on-one process of guidance.
Yep. Get to talk to somebody about exactly what's going on with me. Not everybody, just me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And our last at-home retreat of the season is Saturday, December 6th.
Mm-hmm. Can people still sign up?
I believe so. I will. I'll check.
It's quite
after.
A ways off, so I can't. I would guess they can. I was just realizing that I think the New Year's retreat is full. So now I've got in my head that everything is full, but I guess people can check in and find out for themselves.
Yes, I will get a definitive answer on that and let you know after one of our callers.
All right. All right. Thank you.
And so that will be our post-game celebration, and we'll practice letting in the joy and gratitude for our work together in 2014.
Isn't that fun?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's great.
I mean, truly, it's been an amazing year. Starting with that, extraordinary set of commitments for how we were gonna practice through the year, and
yes.
Then one of the highlights for me was the bridge walk and all the steps and the fitness
yes.
of that and the focus on healthy eating and
yes.
Happy participation. It's been a great year, and hopefully a lot of folks are going to get together to celebrate. Just pat ourselves on the back, by golly. We did it.
Yes, yes. And what I like about what you're sharing is, the reminder for celebration and appreciation and not on the things that are still undone.
No, exactly. Because that's what conditioning wants
yes.
to focus on, right?
Yes.
Well, yeah, but you didn't. Blah, 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 blah. Who cares?
Yes.
Who cares? Let's look at what we accomplished.
Great.
Yeah.
So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all our events. And to make guest show, to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry today, press *6 and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael, I'm Jodine, and Sherry, it's Jodine.
Hi.
Oh, hello.
Oh, okay. I'm calling for the first time on the new platform, and I'm all kind of flustered. but I got through, yay.
Yeah, well, you're loud and clear.
Good. I have an AT&T phone, so I'm hearing the clicking, but I was actually amazed at how Penny and Jen just, like, kept going through the clicking. Were they hearing it?
It's inspiring, isn't it?
It is inspiring.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, you know, the benefits of practice.
Yeah. Yep. And now you're going to get to enjoy some of those yourself, right?
Yeah, I guess.
As you
we'll
click along.
See. Yeah. So I have been unable to call the show since March because I have a new schedule and new duties at my job, and I'm always doing these end-of-the-day deadline things when the show is on. So today is a holiday, and I got the call.
Well, that's a rotten kind of job that keeps a person occupied like that for months on end.
Well, it's actually a trade-off because my new schedule, and my new schedule is something that I requested based on being on partial disability because of my Parkinson's, and I wanted to keep my job, but I couldn't do it full time. And so in the end, what that meant was that my schedule changed.
Uh-huh.
And the tasks that I do changed. And, you know, I don't know if they would have, like, fired me if we couldn't have come to this. I mean, I guess they can't really fire me, but we came to this negotiated kind of settlement.
Yeah,
like,
and part of that you lose Tuesday nights and you get to have your job. So
So that seems
a good thing. And periodically there's a holiday, not that often apparently, between March and November, but here we have one. So we get to hear from you. This is good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wanted to share about something that I saw through my focus in coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been getting a huge amount of benefit from the coaching program. And you know, we always pick a focus for the 6 week. They're in 6 week chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I picked my focus is what I do with unscheduled time.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you, it's just been, it's like I'm hitting this gold mine of, like, wow.
A treasure trove of awarenesses.
Yeah, yes. Awarenesses, right, left, center. I'm looking actually at my process map of it right now on a giant post-it in my office at home. And what happens is when I'm confronted with unscheduled time, a lot of competing interests arise,
mm-hmm.
and it's voices in my head, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then a number of options kind of fall out from that, of
mm-hmm.
like what I might do, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing happens after that is that conditioning gets in there, and it goes through this entire list, and it says, no, no, no way, absolutely not, no, no. Like, it just, like, vetoes almost everything. And then it can go one of two ways. It either talks me into a distraction where I'm not doing any of these things which I would like to be doing
mm-hmm.
To support me.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually when the distraction is over, I get back to a repeat of that scenario where all the options come up. And it may be at that point that one of the options has become really urgent.
Hmm.
And then that one is okay to do.
Urgently.
Urgently, right. And I do it, and I feel better, but I feel worse, too,
mm-hmm.
because it tells me things like, you never do anything ahead of schedule. And then I have, like, a decision to be perfect, like I'm going to do this right next time, and the whole thing, like, starts over.
Okay.
So then there's one more thing, but if you want to jump in.
Oh, too bad, because I have the solution. Nope, give me the whole story.
Okay, so the whole story, I thought about, so I saw that basic part of it, and I saw how conditioning categorizes these options into things that I'm allowed to do and I'm not allowed to do. And one of the things I noticed was that I'm almost always allowed to exercise because I've gone up against conditioning and its resistance to the exercise so many times that I've like worn it out.
Uh-huh.
So I'm allowed to exercise pretty much whenever I want. And that was kind of remarkable when I realized that I've gotten into this place in life.
Uh-huh.
Where it's just worn out, you know, in this one little category.
Mm-hmm.
And then it occurred to me, you know, what other things would I like to be doing that conditioning won't let me do that I could actually just start doing as a practice and wear it out, you know?
Wear out the resistance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, there's lots of other things I'd like to be doing regularly that I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of stunned, actually, by that whole piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, excuse me, I would like to say that some of the most miserable times in my life, excuse me, have been times when I had free time.
Yes, me too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's just, you know, so you don't feel alone in this. And I bet there are people out there all over the world who are nodding. Yes, yes. And so one of the places that I got to that I found extremely helpful was identifying what it is that I want out of spending time, having free time. What do I want? Why would I want to have it in the first place? And then what do I want from it? And what I realized was that I wanted to be happy. I wanted to feel good. I wanted to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And of course, the whole process that you're describing is designed to give us everything but that. It gets focused on the content as if that matters, and then just tortures us into, you know, getting to a place of wishing we never had free time so we didn't have to go through this, right? So
yeah.
Then, now, it seems to me, because I heard a couple of things in there. One was free time, and then I kind of heard that it slid some things into that category that could get urgent. So my first strategy would be to sort out, what do I want to do with free time? Which is different from catching up on email or, you know, that's, to me, that slides over into another part of the week. This is free time. This is my time, discretionary time. I get to spend it the way I want to spend it if I can figure out what that is. Yeah? So what I would do is take those things that I have 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, and what would I like to do? And so I make a list of those. And then I would put each one of those on a piece of paper, and I would put them in a hat or a bowl or whatever, and I would draw one out. And that's what I would do with my free time. Now, if it's...
That's great. Yeah, that would be great.
If it's something that... So, you know, say I have six things that I would like to do, but I never have time to do them. Okay? So then that's my six. So I did that one. Now, of course, conditioning never likes to lose an opportunity to torture. So it's going to say, well, I want to do that next week, too. I want to do that. I want to do that the next time I need to. Okay, no, sorry, we did that. And so that goes, you know, behind the bowl or under the hat. And the next time I have free time, I'm choosing from the five. And I just keep doing that until I've picked, you know, finally you get down to the last one, you know that's the one you're going to do. And the rules of the game, there's no arguing. You know, it conditioning doesn't get to say, yeah, but I don't want to do that now. Yep, well, tough. It's free time. This is what we're going to do. These are things we want to do. This is the plan. And now the job is to enjoy it. Because that's the whole point of doing something you want to do in your free time. Enjoy yourself. It's
workshop. Not having, right. Instead of getting into this endless iterative conversation mm-hmm. with conditioning,
mm-hmm.
You know, about those things. Mm-hmm. So that completely takes it out of conditioning's grip if you just pull it out of a hat, right?
That's
then
right.
It's not going to say, no.
That's right.
Right.
And they're all things that you want to do. Right, because that's part of it. Well, you never have time. You know, you never get to. Wouldn't it be great if you got to, but you don't get to because you. Okay, so they're all. It's been established. These are all things that you want to do. There you go. You do them.
Yeah.
And maybe at the end of that, you realize, well, you know, knitting really wasn't as fabulous as I thought it was going to be, and neither was, you know, whatever the other thing is. So I'm just going to narrow it down to 4. And then next time we start all over again, I put 4 in the hat, and I just keep going that way, watching what comes up, watching what conditioning tries to do, watching how much this whole drama has nothing to do with anything other than trying to ruin your good time.
Yes, I suspected that for a long time.
All right. Now, this is definitely, you know, I understand we may have to wait another 6 or 7 months, but do your best to let me know, okay?
Oh, okay. I certainly will.
All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I'm looking for a hat.
All right. Good. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Geraldine. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Rochelle from Charlotte.
Hey, Rochelle, you sound like you're standing outside trying to talk to us from Charlotte. You sound very far away.
Oh, my goodness. I'm using my computer.
A very good way to get around those clicks if we can just hear you.
Okay.
You know, Rochelle, I think Michael, can you hear okay?
Yeah, why don't you keep talking?
You sound far away, but we can hear you.
You can hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to look for like a headset, but I can't put my hands on it right now. Okay.
Oh, there.
That's better.
Oh, yeah, you sound great.
Is that better? Okay, very good, very good.
Perfect.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to follow up on my last call.
Uh-huh.
A couple of things from that. If you recall, I was looking at the idea of having a meditation group.
Yes.
And what kind of format to use. And our conversation was very helpful. A couple of things. I love that it's recorded because I can listen to it again because I don't hear 50%, if not 80% of what's said while I'm on the call.
Uh-huh.
And
yes,
so,
no, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the highest level of practice, right, in conversation with another human being. Absolutely.
Exactly. And so you asked a couple of questions that were very enlightening that I just didn't get on the call. But when listening to it later, I was like, oh, my gosh. And really helped pry conditioning's fingers off of this idea type of thing. And the question was how is a different type of meditation practice, the more medically oriented one, different from what we do in living compassion? And my answer was, it's about the same. However, when I listened to it and when I recorded around this issue, It's not the same. It is very, very different. And a lot of that has to do with what Jen and Penny were talking about at the beginning, is the privileged environment.
Uh-huh.
And I've done other meditation groups and practices, but I am committed to living Compassion Sangha and love the retreats and the activity and always looking for a way to participate. And it has gone on for years. And I think the reason that it is so satisfying for me and resonates with the person inside of me who practices is the privileged environment. And interestingly enough, I keep getting that privileged environment message. Even at the beginning of the call, Jen and Penny were talking about the privileged environment and at the monastery and maintaining the privileged environment. And you wrote, I think, a musing thing about the privileged environment. And that puts a very different spin and a intimacy to practice that is so much different than what a lot of other places do, and it is maintained very well, very gently, but it makes it very different and safe, and yeah.
Yes, safe. Exactly so. That's a great word to describe it. Just safe, yeah. On every level.
Exactly, exactly. And so, in looking at that, in listening and practicing around that, it's not the same. You know, I keep coming back to Living Compassion. I keep trying to get on the radio show. I keep listening. I keep participating. And I didn't do that with any other practice sangha group that I came across, and I've come across quite a few type of thing. And there are great things with all of them, and you know, they're based in the Buddhist teaching, but this works and resonates with me. And I think in doing a practice group that it doesn't even make me feel good to offer any other kind of school of thought. I'm going to do it in the tradition of Living Compassion with a privileged environment and that type of thing.
May I ask you about that?
Yes, ma'am.
Because it does seem, with what we talked about, that you're in a kind of a vulnerable position offering these kinds of things. And I'm wondering if it would be possible to do the I want to say certifiable, but that has a different connotation. The one that is more acceptable, where you can go and be trained and that sort of thing. Could you do that with the privileged environment?
I could do that with the privileged environment. I very well could. However, this is what also came up in listening to you and in recording listening over. One of the other things you asked me is that, so it's your profession that's getting to be a stumbling block. And I said, yes, it is. However, I don't think it's the profession. I think it's ego and conditioning.
Uh-huh.
And here's how it works. It always wants me to prove my worth by some certificate, some credentialing, some type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it stems from my profession, but it is something it is latched on to, that I'm not authentic unless I've been stamped with somebody's approval, type of thing. And so it can take a delightful idea and then drag it down with credentialing and hoops to jump through. And so I think that is conditioning doing that, because it had me worried about, is it legitimate? Can I offer it in a medical setting? And then I was thinking, my gosh, who's going to sue me for malpractice for teaching meditation?
Right.
You know, really?
Yeah.
Really?
If somebody does, they were going to get you one way or the other.
Exactly. And so, and the other thing is that it's not medical practice.
Right.
It is an offering of meditation, a space
of
available for that. If somebody comes to me and needs to discuss something medical, then I direct them to an office visit. If they need something else, I have resources I can direct them to other things, type of thing. But it is just another space to maintain a privileged environment and to practice and to meditate and to support people with that. And if somebody does question the validity of it, my gosh, there's a meditation medical journal. So there's data to support it, but there's no definite thing that I have to go that way.
Yes, and of course the thing that we always get to is, well, if you don't like it, if it doesn't work for you, don't do it.
Exactly.
So keep looking, find something that does work for you, and do that. And boy, no hard feelings.
Exactly, exactly. Being very clear that I'm offering a place and a time to meditate, to have the privileged environment, type of thing. But if you're looking for medical care, then you have to make an appointment and that type of thing.
Yes.
And if you need something else, then I can point you to some other resources.
Yes.
You don't have to do this, but this is an offering, type of thing.
Yes.
The as a new practice, the credentialing process for the other thing is kind of cost prohibitive and time prohibitive, taken away from practice, from my professional practice.
Yeah.
And so doing it that way, conditioning, that almost convinced me to give up on the idea and that I can't do it, I don't have time, I don't want to spend the money on doing that. And I had no joy thinking about going to that practice environment. However, when I got the email about the retreat in North Carolina, it was no thought. I signed up for it. I put it on my calendar. And so just the reaction that I have with the offerings from Living Compassion is very different from other offerings, type of thing. And so I did owe you a deep apology, because Living Compassion is so supportive of me and this song is supportive of me, that when it's time for me to offer a space for meditation and that type of thing, I'm going to offer it in the style and in the thought of what supports me, type of thing. I think trying to offer something that I don't wholeheartedly participate in, satisfy ego would be a mistake. I think it wouldn't come across as heartfelt.
Yeah, and so if you're doing something, if you're offering something because it's meaningful to you, it makes a difference in your life, and you want to offer it to other people in the hope that it will make a difference in their life, boom, there you are. And if it's without cost, or if it's just make a donation, if somebody would like to, then really there's hardly anything to argue about there. And again, if somebody wants to argue with you, well, they just want to argue.
Well, and I'm trying to make it absolutely no cost. And if somebody wants to donate, I'm going to direct them to Living Compassion and the Africa Project
That's fabulous. Yeah, you can even put up a little thing there that says, you know, if you would like to support the work in Zambia, then here. And if not, great. Sometimes it's nice to give people something to give back to, because in the same way, you know, that you offer this to them as a way to give, they want to give too, and it's nice to have an option of doing that for people who can do it.
Yes.
And
yes.
Not everybody can, and if you can't, well, that's fine, and if you can, well, that's fine too.
That's fine too.
All right, well, thank you. You'll keep me posted about how it goes, please.
I will keep you posted, and thank you very much.
I am so glad that we were able to talk through that computer, because that way you are click-free.
Yes.
All right. Good night, Rochelle.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
You're
welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rochelle. Sherry, we're going to break here and hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be back.
All right.
The practice theme for this year is upping your game. We are all spiritual athletes in the game of life, and we can train to participate joyfully in the spirit of play. Yes, we are up against a worthy opponent, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. But we can up our chances of success by getting a personal trainer, a Zen awareness coach. The awareness coaches are guided by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching around any number of life issues or awareness practice in general. Coaching places a special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and from old timers that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. Since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to practice, getting a coach assists us to support ourselves while supporting practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, visit sanghamarket.com, go to the Services section, click on the Little Monk, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have more callers, Sherry.
All right, before we take that next call, I want to clarify something.
Sure.
I'm not sure if you know, it was kind of a generic you. When Rochelle said that about the Musings article, and I just want to, I get so much credit for everything. You know, it's wonderful that people generously give me credit. But in fact, the Musings article, as well as the email classes, are all coming from Ashwini. So even though she doesn't put her name on them, I just want people to know that's where they're coming from.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Yep. It takes lots of folks to make this happen. And so just, you know, credit where credit is due.
It's a team effort, and we all do our part.
Exactly. Beautifully stated, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Sure. Sure. And let's talk to our next caller.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
This is Diane calling from Santa Rosa.
Well, good evening. How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually walking outside, so I am enjoying the evening. It's beautiful. Let's see. Well, oh, there's so much to say. First, I would like to say that express some gratitude for three things that really have been supportive lately. And one is the email class, the current one and all the ones that I've been in. And this one, I mean, they've always been amazing, but just to read them, mm-hmm. just the experience of reading the email is an experience that feels like it conveys I mean, I could just read it over and over again, and that would be enough.
you feel yourself transformed in that process.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, so I just feel so grateful for that. And I also feel great. We just had the announcement for the coaching program, and also just feel really grateful for coaching. So it's something that I've done for a while, and it's great. I mean, it's an amazing way of staying connected with practice, with Sangha, really connected with Sangha. I think that really brought it to that level when I started coaching.
Mm-hmm. It's
and,
a huge support, isn't it? It's
yeah.
much more support than one would think something so simple could produce.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really amazing. So just to experience the enthusiasm of the coach for practice, that also would be enough.
Uh-huh.
So I just feel grateful. And then the last thing is the stop, drop, and text program, which I'm doing for the first time, and that also really, you know, three times a day to be able to check in
uh-huh.
and drop, and it has brought practice to the forefront.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that it's we're so lucky with all this technology. Goodness gracious.
I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Of course, what conditioning has been able to do with us forever is, you know, maybe you wake up in the morning and you meditate, you do whatever, and then you go out in the day, and that's it. You're gone.
Yeah.
We belong to conditioning until we come back home, and maybe it would occur to us to meditate again or to read something inspiring or whatever, but most people, it's flop down in front of the TV or get on the computer and try to escape.
Yeah.
And now practice just, it's all around us. It just comes right into our work day, you know, and there you are, you're invited to come to, and, oh, well, what is going on with me? And you text back to somebody, what's going on? And, yeah, it's a great time.
Yeah, it's really great. And, you know, I actually came to this practice through the tweets. That's how I was introduced to anything at all. I just, someone had mentioned your name and I was interested, and I was interested in finding something that could keep me connected to what I know was true. You know, like every couple of hours, is there something out there that does that? And there was. So that was great. And all these other practices, of course, deepened that in a profound way. So I don't even know how to. You know, I mean, the gratefulness is, gratitude is immense.
Yeah.
I know
what you mean. I do. I just, yeah. You know, it's such a, I think it's a world that we both live in and a lot of people live in, but just such a wish that people could know that life doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be a suffering slog. We can actually enjoy life and feel good and live in gratitude and joy and kindness, and if that's possible for us. And
Oh my God, just to hear you say that is really, yeah, it's possible. It's yeah. Right here.
It's right here.
It's, yeah.
Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. God knows that that's a true statement for me. When I look back over my life, if I can get to this place, anybody can.
Yeah.
Anybody can. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So that's what I wanted to start with. And let's see. So there's something that I would love, I don't know, I mean, I don't even know if it's worth exploring, but it seems like conditioning is really this, you know, I've been in such a state of expansion and joy and
lit upness
and happiness and lit upness. I mean, it's just really, it's more often that than not these days, which is really, 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 really great. So I noticed that as I'm really feeling, experiencing that, there's also, so there has been this kind of desire to know more about what it is to be committed to this practice. And in response, boy, the ego is really not happy with that. And what it's using as the most scary, you know, image for that, and that I'm kind of embarrassed to share, but I think it's because I'm embarrassed, it's worth sharing, because ego is embarrassed. Mm-hmm. It's worth sharing. Is the like, oh my God, you're going into a cult.
So,
and you, again, bless. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I've already done some work with it, with the mentor, and, you know, it's all really reassuring. It's like, yeah, well, if that's where the case, even worst case scenario, if that were the case, you know, well, you just go, you know, you leave. I mean, and...
Yeah, well, and yeah. It is kind of funny. I mean, I laugh because, you know, it's a mighty poor cult. That doesn't ask anything of people, that only encourages them to end suffering and live happy lives. you know, that's a lousy cult.
Yeah.
So we should be trying to get something from you, trying to pull you in, trying to, you know, at least find out if you have a, if you own your home so that we can eat or something, you know. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I know. You know, I think as I asked the question, I think it had already lost its power a little bit, the fear. But I think I'm also, well, it not completely, obviously, but I'm also asking it because it seems like such a way that ego takes over.
I don't know. You're exactly right. We've been playing with this thing around here recently of, you know, with the internal conversation, that there are no internal conversations. We don't get the conversations inside our mind, secret conversations, that if they go on for two sentences, then you got to say something because it's conditioning in there trying to make a case for something, trying to get off isolated, secret, and that sort of thing. And so it brings up something that to me is really important for everybody to consider, and that is that no true practice would ever ask you to do anything against the precepts. Ever. So any time something like that, it feels like that happens, then you want to check it out. So people will listen to the voices tell them stories, and then they'll get confused about where that's coming from. You know, in my case, it'll be, well, Sherry thinks, or Sherry's saying, or, well, what Sherry's doing is... And it makes that case for long enough, and the person forgets that the only place that information exists is inside their head. So when that starts going on, it's really important for a person to say, you know, this is what I'm hearing. Is that what you're saying? Are you really saying that?
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't feel comfortable asking that question, then that's a place to look too.
Thank you for that. That's great. And you know what came up as you were talking is, okay, well, of course, I mean, that's kind of obvious now, but the biggest cult is ego.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
That's really what it is, and that it's projecting that everywhere, you know. So I'll share one thing. The first time I think I watched a video of the New Year. Not the New Year,
the kickoff thing we do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I saw that people were wearing the beads.
Ooh.
And oh my God, I had to stop it. You know, I just couldn't. Uh-huh. Our ego stopped it, and so by talking to the mentor about this, just realized. Well, if you want to talk, I mean, you know, like ego is comparing that maybe to, so cult is maybe in comparison to religion, to establish
like
religion, I guess.
That Catholic cult.
That, exactly. Uh-huh. So then look at the Catholic, I mean, there's a lot of ritual, you know, I mean, if someone were to come from another planet and saw people gathered at a Catholic mass, there could be the same reaction, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
There's a lot of outward signs of belonging to that, and expressing the belonging to that, to that faith. So, anyway,
which to the heart can feel supportive, and to ego feels threatening for exactly the reason that you laid out, right? Because you are meant to belong to its cult.
Yes.
Not some other cult.
Right. Yeah. Oh,
so,
wow.
This is good, and I'm really glad you brought it up, because my wish is that you know, people would never be afraid to ask a legitimate question, and even if it's by legitimate, that can include, you know, just stories that ego is telling, but the person is feeling like they're getting pulled into believing it. Well, then ask. I really don't get offended. I don't take much personally, and I understand projection. So, you know, it's I'm a pretty darn safe person to say just about anything to.
Wow. That in and of itself would be evidence enough that this is not a cult.
Or it's a very sneaky cult.
Oh, right.
No. Oh, don't say that.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Oh, you are so welcome. Take good care.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Dion. That was a fascinating conversation, Sherry. Love that.
Yeah,
I love hearing the lit upness also. It's great.
Oh, yeah. And it's good. I mean, you're not gonna do too many things in life that are big, big important things without asking questions and finding out what's going on. So certainly with your spiritual practice, you want to be able to do that.
Yes, and the thing I love about our practice is that, for me, the faith that comes from experience, that comes from going on retreat and going to workshops and listening to the radio show, and, you know, it's a consistently safe experience.
Yeah.
And you can't help but develop faith in that.
Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, we just want to honor ourselves.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if somebody is defensive, then that can be a good clue that it might not be coming from the most centered place. So
yes.
That's important to find out too.
Yes.
Mhm.
And we have time for at least one more caller here.
Great. All right. Thanks, Michael.
Sure. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Renee.
Who is this?
It's Renee.
Oh,
can you hear me?
There you are, yes.
Oh, good. I'm on the road, so I might be a little sketchy.
Oh, all right. Well,
but I was hoping
you're good right now.
Oh, good. I was just going to call in, and the show's been awesome, and I don't have clicking.
Oh, good.
And I have an AT&T phone, so just to report that.
Great. Maybe you just need to be in a car going down the road and
maybe
ahead of the click.
Yeah. But I wanted to call in. It just arose as I was listening in right before the show of how grateful I am for the Sangha, and it was so good to hear Penny and Jen talk about the privileged environment.
Mm-hmm.
But what struck me about it was how every single person who participates, and I know this has been said, and I don't know how to make it sound any more profound than it's already been said in the past, but just how every single person makes the whole practice so much better and so rich.
Yes. And there's kind of no way to express the magnitude of that, is there? Or the profundity of it, or whatever it is that we want to say.
Yes, exactly. And you know, the ones who are writing into the email class, and the ones who are listening to the radio show and not calling in, and the ones who are coaching, and just everyone who is participating, and how much it contributes to the practice and and all that we're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. Before now, and after now.
Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, I bet any of us, if we were to say, you know, we had a little time and we were to say, somebody asked us, so what are the most helpful things in awareness practice that you've experienced? Or what are the most beneficial teachings that you've received? And we would draw from a huge range of experiences.
Yeah. Yes. It's just
Yeah. Something somebody said on the radio show, or as you say, somebody writes in something in the email class, or they say something in a retreat or in a workshop, and it's boom, there you are, and we're changed by it.
Yes, exactly, exactly, and just how we don't know how it works.
Right.
And so, you know, you could be 10 years from now remember something someone said, or it could hit you, or.
Yeah.
You know, or just, there's just no time thing about it. You know, it just happens, and it's a mystery, but it all is so much richer, and I don't know how, the words to say that, but it's like, it's so amazing when everyone is just, all the people that are doing it, and exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of like, we decided to have a potluck, and everybody in the Sangha brought their favorite dish.
Yeah, exactly.
And you got to walk into an enormous room with all of that. You know, it was just
with their flavors and all the ways they did it. Yeah, yeah.
Stunning. Yeah. And you wouldn't know where to begin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just a huge amount of gratitude for that, and for just the way, you know, and like that's a perfect example, because it's using our language, yet it's bringing something that's fresh from that person.
Yes, because each one of us, we can have what we could guess is pretty much the same experience, but how it comes to us and how we express it is unique.
Yes. Yes.
And each time it's uniquely expressed, we have a slightly different slant on something.
Yeah, and it strikes me reading the responses in the email class how they could all be mine, yet they aren't.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you read, they could all be mine, and I love thinking I could express it all in such varied and beautiful ways. You know?
Right. Yeah.
I just go along going, oh, that's beautiful. That's amazing. And,
I do too. I print them out and put them on my wall and go, that is amazing. Like, that statement is amazing. I don't know who said it. Or
Yeah. Could be anybody.
Yeah, so everyone is everyone's teacher, coach, all of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to express that. And
well, thank you.
Grateful, I am. So.
And,
well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad you have such great cell service wherever the heck you are.
Yeah, I am too. And the clicking was quite a challenge, I have to admit.
Oh yes, I was ready to cry uncle after two shows.
Yeah, when I called in tonight and there was no clicking, I was just like, oh, that is beautiful.
Thank goodness. See, there's a lot about practice right there, right? We forget grateful for the things that, in fact, I was walking around today and I was thinking about all of the things in life that I have to be grateful for, not just in a list sort of a way, but just aware of how much I have been given and how much I've received. And I thought, and I'm so grateful for the things I didn't get. You know, the things the things that I thought in a moment that I wanted, but in fact I didn't get, and now I am so deeply grateful that I didn't get them. The wisdom, the intelligence that's orchestrating all of this, if there is such a thing as orchestrating, is certainly making beautiful choices on my behalf, and I'm deeply grateful.
Yeah, and we can be grateful for clear cell phone signals.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, drive safely,
thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Renee. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Renee. And, Sherry, I have an update that the December 6th at-home workshop is indeed still open for registration.
Oh, good. Oh, that's excellent. All right. Oh,
and I've
had a
delightful time tonight.
It's been fun, hasn't it?
It's been great.
All right. Meet you here again.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.